This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Today, we bring you audio from the Embracing Autism IRL video podcast series. Welcome to Embracing Autism IRL. In this video series, we interview guests from a variety of backgrounds who are all linked together through autism. From advocates to therapists to parents and autistic adults, this series will take a well-rounded approach to sharing diverse perspectives on autism spectrum disorder. Our guests are encouraged to speak freely and be their authentic selves when discussing controversial yet critical topics in the autism community. If you'd like to watch the full unedited video of our interview-style podcast spinoff, Embracing Autism IRL, please subscribe to our YouTube channel of the same name and follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Autism Wish. New episodes release monthly. Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Embracing Autism IRL. Today with me, I have Heather Chauvin. Heather is a leadership coach who helps ambitious, overwhelmed women break free from their fears to courageously and authentically live, work, and parent on their own terms. She's a TEDx speaker, author of Dying to Be a Good Mother, and host of the top-ranked podcast Emotionally Uncomfortable, with over 9 million downloads and counting. She's been featured in Forbes, Entrepreneur, Real Simple Magazine, MindBodyGreen, Google, and more. When Heather isn't working, you'll find her living out what she teaches, which might include kayaking in Alaska, snowboarding, hiking, or anything else that challenges what she believes is possible for herself, and of course, inviting her children along the journey. Hi, Heather. Welcome to Embracing Autism.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
We're excited to have you. I don't think we've had a guest quite like you yet. We haven't really spoken to a leadership coach. So I want to just dive in and kind of pick your brain a little bit and learn a little bit more about what exactly that is. And what do you do as a leadership coach?
Yeah. So I didn't know that I wanted to do this work or that I needed to do this work, as I'm sure yourself, right? It's like, life shows us that often mothering kicks our butts. And I actually became a mom when I was 18, and I jumped into parenting backwards. And I remember the first time I looked at my son, I thought, I don't want to become a statistic. And so what I started doing was, of course, over parenting, like the hustle of like overperforming, overdoing. And at the same time, I'm in school for social work. And then I got the Pinnacle social work job. And all of a sudden, I am sitting there thinking, not this, not this, not this. And at the same time, while I'm helping these families with their children and with their children's behavior, I am also struggling with my son's behavior. And I'm a young mom at the same time. Fast forward a few years, and here I am. I leave my social work job because I have a calling for more to help parents see and understand their children's behavior while also trying to understand my son's behavior when I'm getting calls from the school and when I'm trying to learn how to manage his big emotions and all the things. So when I, and it was 10 years ago, and this is where my book came from, Dying to Be a Good Mother. When I was doing all the things, of course, I'm living and breathing and like mothering from this place of give to everybody else. Everybody else needs me. And I was diagnosed with a stage 4 cancer. And at the time, what I realized is while I'm helping parents see and understand their children's behavior, and while I'm really doing all this research to quote unquote become a better mother, what I realized is that I was dying to be good for everyone else. I was neglecting my physical body, my mental body, my emotional body, my spiritual body. And the leadership part is how we show up and lead. And I know your community is full of parents who need to advocate for their children all the time. And as I've had to advocate for my kids many, many times in certain systems and for their health or whatever it was. And I realized that the energy that I lead with and how I treat myself and how I show up on a daily is really impacting not only my relationship with my children, but how they show up in the world, and also the energy to sustain myself so that I can give more and help more. That is the kind of like nutshell version of leadership and how I got to where I am.
What was that moment that made you think, you know, I shouldn't just keep what I've learned to myself and I should take that extra step and go and help other women that you felt were overwhelmed? Because a lot of people, they learn things and then they, you know, they keep it to themselves and they don't feel like the need to go out there and help other people. Was there like a moment or something that kind of triggered that inspiration for you?
There was definitely many moments, but I always had this feeling of like, why do I feel alone? And even though I was still the type of person to do the research and talk to the doctors and go to therapy and read the books and it, like I was doing all the things, but I'm like, why do I still feel alone? And why is everybody kind of just accepting that this is what it is? And I remember when I physically started podcasting, like I started my podcast 8-9 years ago. It was after my diagnosis, but I'm like, why is everybody okay feeling like this? Is anyone else struggling with their children's behavior? What's going on here? I wanted to become like resourceful. And so I just started simply podcasting. And I don't remember an actual moment, but I remember wanting to like be the change and wanting to be resourceful and bring people together. And then as I started doing that, people started like sending me messages of like, I feel the exact same way, or we've had this issue and we've had that issue. And so that just kind of feeds into it too, where you're getting that feedback and you're just like, okay, I'm not alone. And that's how you start creating community. But yeah, it was always like an internal feeling of like, how come everyone's okay with this?
One of the things that you talk about on your podcast is about that sense that some women get when they're in these high tension situations, I guess you could call it, where they start kind of feeling uncertainty and then you start kind of losing your confidence in your parenting ability. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that is definitely true for a lot of special needs parents, particularly mothers, because statistically, it seems like mothers tend to kind of take on the bulk of the therapies and the paperwork and things like that. So what advice from your experience could you give to those parents who might be having those feelings of uncertainty during these challenging situations with their children?
So I have three boys and they're 19, 14, and 11. And I always tell people the second you think everything's great and like you've advocated and you're like, okay, good, we're here, we made it, the child goes through like another developmental phase or something comes up and you're advocating again and you're, you know, doing all the things. It's exhausting. We know this. We know that it is mentally, physically, emotionally, and financially draining to constantly have to show up, use your voice, and advocate. That's just the advocacy. That's not even what happens, you know, maintaining or managing the behaviors at home. So there's a lot of actual skills that are required here that we have never been taught. You're not never taught these actual leadership skills until you're put in these situations. And women, we are taught to give, 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 give. And we don't realize that we have to nourish ourselves too. We have to recharge. And anytime I am talking to families with children with special needs, they look me dead square in the eyes and they're like, Heather, that's great, but I have a unique situation and I can't do that, or I can't leave my children, or these are the worries that keep me up at night. And I'm like, okay, what are you going to do about it? Because one of the biggest things that I've learned through my health crisis was, how did I get here? And it kind of blew up that part of your brain that like mortality of, oh, I could just act like this forever, right? Like, no, what am I going to do if this happens again? What if I'm going to do if this happens to somebody else? What if this happens to one of my children? And what I really had to do was ask myself, which is why you can see my hat says, how do you want to feel? Because when I was diagnosed, I was going through not only startup in my business, trying to see and understand what was going on with my kids, advocating in school, going through processes, systems, diagnostics. And I realized that I had nothing left to give. Like there I am, everything just had to crumble and fall. And I had to ask myself, what is it that you need to get back up? And there was a moment, and I talk about it in my book, that in the middle of the night, I'm like in a state of crisis, I'm recovering and in between my treatments at the hospital. And I go into the bathroom and I'm in fetal position and my body's in a state of fight or flight. And I think a lot of people can resonate with this when you're like really in a pinch, and it could be in any situation of your life. You're like ruminating at night. You're just so worried. You're in a panic, right? It's almost like when our bodies are about to rest that's when our brain starts and we're freaking out and we're in a state of fight or flight. And so I'm in the bathroom and in my head, I'm repeating, I'm going to die. I'm going to die. I'm going to die. I'm going to die. Although that could have been true, I had to get myself in present moment. And I'm like, okay, you are here. You are here. You are alive. You are well. You are here, Heather. You are okay today, right now in this moment. Then I had to ask myself, how do you want to feel? I didn't want to feel dead. I didn't want to feel lack of energy. I didn't want to feel chronically overwhelmed. I didn't want to feel angry, resentful, depleted. And so what I had to do was shift my mind to how do you want to feel? And I was used to reading all the books, like what you would call personal development books, right? I was used to reading all of those books. And then so I'm like, how do I want to feel? How do I want to feel? And the word that came to me was alive. I'm like, I want to feel alive. I want to feel alive. I want to feel strong. I want to feel energized. Well, what woman doesn't want to feel that? What person doesn't want to feel that? But when you're so used to advocating and so used to showing up every single day, getting the to-do list done, and by the end of the day, you're exhausted. You close your eyes on the pillow. You wake up again and you do it all over again till one day it's not sustainable anymore. And so I started asking myself, how do I want to feel? I want to feel alive. This was not the life that I wanted. And then I got afraid because I didn't know how to feel alive. I had no evidence of when I had felt like that in my entire life. And so I had to really look at what would an alive person do? And there I am backed into a corner only because my physical body has nothing left to give. I don't have, this is not because I want to go on some luxury experience. I literally have to fight to feel alive. And so every day I started taking these little bites of how do I want to feel? How do I want to feel? What would an alive person do? She's going to take a shower. Next day, what would an alive person do? She's going to take a shower. She's going to go for a little walk. What would an alive person do? She's going to stock with overcaffeinated and fill it with some water. And it was just like these little tiny things. And then I started getting more and more courage to ask myself, what would that look like in my work? What would that look like in my relationships? And the funny thing about this, which is not so funny, is the more I started filling, I know it's so cliche and I hate saying it, filling my cup, but paying attention to how I wanted to feel and actively acting on those feelings like 10 minutes at a time, I call it the 10-minute habit, I started to become less reactive, like emotionally towards my children. So when they had big behaviors and my body wasn't going into such a state of fight or flight, and I'm like, okay, I can be present now. I can actually see what's going on without feeling so overwhelmed. So I started buying back my time. I started buying back my energy. And because I had that time and energy, then I could put that into my work. I started making more money. My marriage improved. It was really interesting because then I had the energy to actually advocate for my kids from a bigger standpoint, from a high level.
It makes sense because it's kind of like using that mentality for big life goals like physical fitness, weight loss, dieting. Like the things that don't work is when you try to just do it all at once in one go, then you get burnt out and then you feel like you can't do it. So that incremental approach seems to be like what you've applied here with that. What do you call it? The 10-minute what?
10-minute habit. Yeah.
The 10-minute habit. Yeah. Because I don't remember the science, but it says it takes like a couple months to get a true habit formed. Mm-hmm. So 10-minute chunk is very doable, I think, for that amount of time. So that's pretty smart.
Yeah. I always talk about reverse engineering how you want to feel. And there's like this whole chapter I talk in my book about energetic time management, like managing the energy, not the time. But, you know, I work with a lot of very overwhelmed women who are like, I got a lot on my plate, right? Like I have children who have special needs. I'm working, I'm doing all the things, I'm trying to manage it all. I know my life is not sustainable. The last thing I think I have is a lot of time. And so I'm like, this isn't really about changing your life overnight. This is about sustainability. But the other thing I want to say is it's not the thing we're after, it's the feeling. And that was a huge part of my kind of healing process as well, and really being able to show up for my kids and what they needed and advocate for them. And even just like, I don't want to say rising above the occasion, but like life is a game. If you don't show up to the challenges, they are going to take you out. And so there was a point where I just had to accept, you either accept this and overcome it, or it's just going to consume you and bring you down. And so the whole concept of like, how do I want to feel? How do I want to feel? That became my North Star now. But when I started writing things down, there's a journal prompt I use a lot and I tell my clients to as well. It's called, wouldn't it be nice if? Oftentimes when I'm doing public speaking and I'm speaking to rooms of parents with children with special needs, they're like, I don't want to write my list. Like, I can't go there because I know that some of the things that I want will never happen. And I'm like, okay, I get it. I call it emotionally uncomfortable. Like, we need to lean into what we want to avoid. Like, we need to go there because oftentimes you're asking yourself, wouldn't it be nice if, you know, my children didn't struggle so much? Wouldn't it be nice if I felt, you know, safe leaving them alone? Wouldn't it be nice if I knew that they were okay at school? Whatever it is, what is the actual feeling that you're after? And it could be safety, it could be security, it could be supported, freedom, whatever it is. But that feeling is really, really important because if you start giving yourself more of that feeling, like, how can I? What would life look like? How can I feel free now? How can I let go of things that are no longer serving me that have nothing to do with parenting? And when you start doing that in other areas of your life, you literally become more aligned. And the beauty of that is you start creating this freedom, not only for yourself, but your children as well. And I've experienced that wholeheartedly, especially with my oldest, when we've had to really advocate for him in the educational system. And I had to get very emotionally uncomfortable and think outside the box.
What would you recommend with parents of neurodivergent children who really don't have that time, and maybe 10 minutes to them seems impossible, or maybe they're having like physiological consequences of it, like physical burnout, or they're just physically tired and they're just exhausted. Do you think that that's still like a doable thing for them? Is there something else that you typically recommend, or what is kind of like your go-to for that?
Energy is something that you can create more of, but you have to be self-aware enough to say what gives me energy versus what sucks the life out of me. People think I'm tired, I need more rest, but that's not necessarily true because I remember using like rest as almost like my avoidance strategy. Like I would want to sleep as my drug of choice to literally avoid what was going on in my life and all of the overwhelm that I was feeling. You're going to think this sounds a little wide, but I'm all for it because it works. You have to talk to your fatigue. So I work with a lot of functional medicine people as well. They tell me all the time, they're like, Heather, did you know that you actually help women balance their hormones? And I'm like, what do you mean? You're like, you help them with stress management. And it's not just about taking a supplement or nutrition all the time and this exercise stuff that we feel we need to put more on our plate. A lot of it is, why am I tired? And that 10 minutes of even just self-reflection while you're lying in bed, while you're, you know, sitting in the car. I mean, one of my things that I absolutely love is noise-canceling headphones. And I'm sure a lot of parents love those too. Put the noise-canceling headphones on. Put something in like that you're listening to that could even just be calming your nervous system, right? Like your body is tired. It doesn't mean you need extra sleep. Great. Sleep's awesome. But you could sleep 24 hours a day and wake up and still feel exhausted. So there's tiny, tiny things that you could do, like just closing your eyes for a few minutes and doing some deep breathing or listening to some relaxing music and some noise-canceling headphones while you're doing the dishes. Like how can we multitask these things? I don't like the compartmentalizing of morning routines and nighttime routines. Like that is not realistic or sustainable for the modern family, especially if you have neurodivergent children.
Yeah, especially with autistic kiddos because a lot of them don't sleep.
Yeah.
So part of the process as a parent who's kind of going through this stressful moment and, you know, you're going through that burnout, you're trying to find the time, you're fatigued. Oftentimes what comes from that is this kind of rush of emotions. It's not just with toddlers that when they get overtired, they get really emotional. Adults do too. Like if you're lacking sleep, it's like the truth all just bubbles up and you really get all those emotions worked up and you got to process those and figure out what is this? What can I do about it? So what is some of the things that you suggest when it comes to parents trying to handle or process specifically uncomfortable emotions that come up in their parenting journey instead of like being able to have those resilient moments?
I don't know why, but the story is coming to me, so I want to tell it to you. So when I started my business, I was still in my corporate job, my government job, and I started teaching meditation and mindfulness to children. Like, that was my first in. And I did it because parents would say to me, fix my child's behavior. They would physically drop their child off, and I would like rent out space in a yoga studio, and they'd be like, fix this kid. I'm so overwhelmed. Like, here you go. And I'm like, okay. So I would attract children from all walks of life, a lot of neurodivergent children, autistic, and everyone was welcome, had no idea who was walking in the room. And I remember specifically this one boy, his name was Andrew, and I even talk about him in my book because he, like, I'll never, ever, ever forget this. It was like a 4-week series, and I'm teaching mindfulness, and, you know, we would have some, like, so I would like walk them through this guided meditation. They would be on their yoga mats. And then after, the kids would have crayons and they would have papers and they would draw and they would do all things. And most of the kids would draw like violent things. Like, these boys would draw, like, you know, trucks and guns and war stuff or whatever. Girls drawing like rainbows and kitty cats. And Andrew drew exactly what I was saying to him in the mindful exercise, like word for word, exactly. But Andrew was not on his mat. Andrew was running around the room. It didn't bother me. He was just running around the room. And I remember when his mom picked him up, she said to me, I am so sorry for his behavior. And I said, I don't think you are the one that needs to apologize. I think he was probably one of the only kids in the room that was actually listening to me. And what that did for me as an adult, it was a game changer for me. And that was a moment in time when I said, part of the reason why we are so exhausted is because we are trying to advocate for our children to put a square peg in a round hole. And the round hole is society, right? The systems that have been built for them. And we're like, you need to fit in. You need to fit in. And we care so deeply about our children and we want them to belong. Sometimes they're not built to belong. They are built to stand out and they are built to make an impact in this world. And that day, Andrew taught me that if I don't project and I don't judge and I sit back and I meet him where he's at, he is listening. And when I showed up from that energy as an adult, I wasn't angry. I wasn't exhausted and I wasn't frustrated. And I know that that's like a big mindset shift, but my kids at the time were just starting with behaviors that were like questionable that we started asking, you know, asking around. And I remember going into conversations thinking, if I trust my children that they're telling me who they are, or their behavior is telling me what they need, and I'm not judging them as much, let's see how I feel. And what I realized was a lot of my fatigue was the fear of judgment or the fear of projecting onto my kids of not fitting in. But when I just kind of like kept showing up for my kids and focusing more on like, how did I want to feel, even though I was being judged, I wasn't as tired. I wasn't as overwhelmed. And I realized that fatigue inside of me was like there to keep me safe, like a heaviness. And so when I would talk to it, which sounds a little woo-woo, but sometimes I journal to my fatigue and I'm like, what do you need from me? And it's like, stop trying to be so controlling. What do you need from me? Like, have that uncomfortable conversation with that service provider. What do you need from me? Let your kid do the thing that they want to do and trust the process. Trust that they will be okay. And that's really, really hard. I think when you're parenting differently wired kids, there's a lot of grief that we have to process. There's a lot of feelings that we have to go through. It teaches you a lot about yourself and like actually becoming the adult that your children need.
Yeah, I personally experienced something similarly towards the beginning of that autism journey when we first found out our kids were diagnosed, in terms of the public policing that you kind of instinctively do as a parent, because maybe you don't personally care, but you care that other people care and you're worried about whether that's going to bring shame or judgment to your child, whether it's going to cause them to be bullied, whether you're going to be treated a certain way. And I did definitely notice that when we did our mindset switch, which was the inspiration behind embracing autism, we definitely suddenly saw that reduction of that fatigue. It's almost like a social fatigue, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Like you're performing, you're trying to perform and protect. Like there's so much energy output to like hold it together.
That's part of what you were talking about in your book where you mentioned like the whole connecting with your children. Because if you're not able to accept them for their authentic selves, it makes that connection difficult to feel or difficult to create. What are your thoughts on that?
What I heard you say is if you don't authentically trust yourself. Our children, it doesn't matter the diagnosis. Everyone will have their own unique path. Your children will come to you to trigger you and bring you back home to yourself. If you are willing to say, what is this showing me? What is the lesson in here for me? There were many, many times over and over and over again in my parenting journey, and it never stops. And unfortunately, bigger kids, bigger problems. It's never about, I'm like, oh, this gets easier. No, it doesn't. If you're willing to say, how is this an opportunity for me to grow? It's personal growth on steroids. That's what I say parenting is. And then just ask, sprinkle a little differently wired kids or whatever it is. And it's like, oh, wow, this is personal growth on steroids. If you are the type of person that grew up being incredibly shy, and then you are gifted an autistic child, you're going to be seen. You're going to be the one that everyone notices in the room. And you're going to have to learn to use your voice. And you're going to have to learn to be heard. And you're going to have to learn to teach your child to communicate what they need, even if they're nonverbal. It's like they're going to have to learn how to communicate their needs to you. And sometimes they won't be able to in traditional sense, but you will be the interpreter of that, of being able to read your children's behavior and communicate that to others. If you can see parenting as a like personal growth journey, spiritual growth journey, then it becomes a different identity than always being angry, resentful, exhausted, overwhelmed, burnt out, chronically fatigued. All of those signs are there within your body of like, okay, I need rest. I need rest. I need to say no. We need to simplify our lives. I talk to a lot of parents as well with this rescuer mindset. So I talk about the drama triangle. The drama triangle has like three different like roles that we play, like the persecutor, the rescuer, or the victim. I'm sure we all do this, but I've done this in my own parenting of like being the victim of the circumstance, right? But oftentimes as women, we end up in the rescuer role and we want to fix our children. And so what you're doing is your brain is focused on how can I fix this behavior? How can I fix this behavior? And you really have to like, I don't like the word balance, but you kind of have to balance it out of like, how can I advocate to help my child like get back in alignment, but also learn to accept them for who they are today and to see them like that. And then how can I challenge my child, right? Because sometimes you want to rescue because you're like, oh, well, you're already struggling with this. I'll just do this for you. But you want to empower your child to be resilient, to show up, to do the hard thing, to do the emotionally uncomfortable thing. If you're willing to show up and learn and grow, your children are going to show you how resilient you are and who you are at your core. It will rock your world, but they'll bring you back home to yourself.
I feel like that is something that people kind of struggle with in terms of fighting your instincts or like fighting your nature. So if you do find that you are like the rescuer, I think that that's the challenging part. For example, like I would consider myself a rescuer. And for me, the challenging part is you have to sometimes be okay with potential failure, or you have to be okay with an outcome not being quite what you want it to be. So it's kind of like giving up some of that control. But I agree with you that if you don't do that, it's kind of like a muscle. If you're not working it, it's never going to get stronger.
Like that's such a blessing because you wouldn't be where you are today without that like pusher, right? Without that advocate. We have to realize with every strength or with every like, if you want to say the rescuer, it's balancing that. There's been many times in my children's like journey where I'm like, okay, I'm gonna let them fall a little bit. I'm gonna let them like make mistakes. And I'm like, I'm watching when is it appropriate to come in and rescue. It's like holding it with boundaries. Like I'm there, you know I have you, but I do need to see you show up. I do need to see you try a little bit. And there's just shadow sides with everything. So it's like light and dark. So I know that my strengths can also be my greatest weaknesses. And I think just accepting that, so you can watch your pattern, like when you were over rescuing, and then using your support system to call you out on it too. And if you are in a partnership and give your partner permission, they'll definitely call you out on it.
Or maybe you don't give them permission and they still call you out on it. So I ask my guests this question. Everybody who comes on, I always ask them the same question. It's really interesting to see everyone's different answers. So I just wanted to ask you, what do you think the phrase embracing autism means to you?
Embracing who you really are and being willing to listen to diverse perspectives.
So we're going to wrap up here, but before we do, I wanted to give you an opportunity to share. Is there anything that you wanted to say that perhaps I didn't give you an opportunity to speak on?
When I wrote my book, Dying to Be a Good Mother, I thought the story was not just about my cancer journey, but it kind of started from like my motherhood journey. And I go through, yes, I go through cancer, but I also go through all these other parts of myself. And the things that I've been teaching women about, who do you want to be? How do you want to feel? You know, everything we talked about today, what are your children teaching you? All of that. And the dying to be good part is not just about my physical body. It's your emotional, it's your spiritual. And I think how we show up, and this is not just for women, it's all humans, is how we are dying to be good for other people. When really the secret that we are all searching for is to honor ourselves. And I truly believe at my core that when we start to honor our needs and fulfill our needs, even though that's going to be met with guilt, that's going to be met with overwhelm, that's going to be met with resistance. But when you start to do that, I believe that we will start to see and accept our children more. In this world, is like when we stop self-abandoning, we will actually see what is going on and who our children need to be instead of trying to change so much. Health is a thing. We can advocate, we can challenge, we can look at the research, we can do all the things. But I think there's a lot of self-abandonment that happens in all humans. And I think we need to stop doing that because our children are telling us very clearly who they are, but we're not listening because we're too busy trying to rescue and save and control. Just so, so busy in our minds.
That is so true. I think particularly for mothers, at least in my experience.
Yeah.
So thank you so much. Is there a place that my listeners can follow you? Are you on Instagram? Do you have a website? Where can they find the book?
All the things. So I'm very active on the podcast. It's called Emotionally Uncomfortable. I have 3 episodes a week. So there's like a lot going on over there. The book, Dying to Be a Good Mother, can be purchased anywhere books are sold online. And my website, Heather Chauvin, chauvin.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us. I really enjoyed this conversation and I feel like I learned something new.
Good. Thank you.
Have a good one.
This has been the audio from the Embracing Autism Podcast live stream series. Please check out our YouTube channel at youtube.com/@autismwish to catch these shows live. Otherwise, stick around next week for our next episode. This is Embracing Autism.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.